Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight for a very special discussion of 1991's Backdraft by my friend Adam Risky.
Did you know that there's five rules to being a Chicago firefighter, Patrick?
You sound exactly like Bull McCaffrey.
Yeah. Do you want to know what the five
are?
Oh,
yeah. Tell me the five rules.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Because if you don't want to know, I ain't going to say them.
You're either Bull McCaffrey or Father Guido Sarducci. I can't quite tell.
I don't know. It's going to go back and forth. So the first rule is... If you want to be a Chicago firefighter, you can't say firefighter.
Okay.
You have to say firefighter. You have to say fire twice.
Okay. Firefighter.
Number two.
Yeah.
Is you got to play the song Heat Wave on the way to every fire.
Of course.
Number three.
Tree is good. Good use of the tree.
Number three is you have to refer to the number three as tree.
Got it.
And you refer to real trees as, you know, that thing over there.
All right.
Number four.
All right.
Is somebody in the firehouse always has to have a roof that needs fixing at
naturally,
one point in time.
Naturally.
And
only when something's up, though. You only go up there banging on the roof when something's on your mind.
I've never seen a firefighter movie or TV show where they're not like playing grab ass at one point, fixing a roof.
Yeah.
Or like putting Hellman's mayonnaise on their sandwiches and then they're like, is this olive oil?
I'm waiting patiently for rule five.
Okay, sorry about that. And rule five is don't take that shit from it. Don't let it know that you're scared.
Those are all words to live by.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bull McCaffrey. If this is your first time listening to the show, congratulations. You are now prepared to be a Chicago firefighter. You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You should go there.
Yeah.
I suspect that some of you who listen to our podcast every week, which we very, very much appreciate, we're happy to have all of you as listeners, but I suspect some of you don't go to our website, fthismovie.net, content every day. Maybe you don't like to read, but click around, see. Some things are pretty digestible, lists and such.
Yeah, the articles aren't long, and you're always going to get something funny or informative out of
them. That's right. I understand if you don't want to read 1,000 words on the new subspecies movie, but listen, there's lists about wacky stuff.
If you want to read 749 words about unfinished business, that's there
for you.
This
is your place.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter. We're at FThisMovie. You can like us on Facebook if you haven't already. You can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store. Leave us a review if you're a fan. It helps us, and helping us, of course, helps you. I think I have that right.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you get your podcasts on Stitcher, you can always listen to us on Stitcher. If you use Stitcher or you use iTunes, I think it's only our 100 past episodes. We have over 200. I don't know what the exact count is. I'm saying
probably
it's
at like 250.
It's got to be close to 250 at this point. So
yeah.
You need to go to fthismovie.net. We even have a little podcast tab. You can just click on that and find all of our past shows. But we're so happy to have you guys. And thank you. Thank you very, very much for supporting this podcast and supporting our site.
Yes, absolutely.
Adam Risky.
Holler if you hear me.
Who is in the midst of a move.
It's just about done.
And took some time out to talk Backdraft. but have you seen anything good lately, sir?
Yeah. So I've got a whole hand of movies to talk about.
That would be 1, 2, 3. Adam Riskin only has four
tree.
Fingers, everyone.
One, two, three.
He's the four-fingered man.
Yes, it is. So I saw Run All Night about a week ago.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Did you see it?
Nope.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to watch it when it comes on Blu-ray.
Okay.
Or digitally or
red
something
box.
Like that. You don't need
that to. That is a red box movie.
Here's the thing. I'm a huge fan of those four film favorites Warner Brother packs.
Right.
Where it's like one star, four movies, because we can't sell them individually anymore.
Absolutely.
This would definitely be on a Liam Neeson four films favorite.
Unknown.
Nonstop. And then
Run All
Walk
Night.
Among the Tombstones.
And Walk Among the Tombstones.
And then Run All Night.
Okay.
And
three of those were from the same director.
Yes, they were. Yeah, Jaime Colet-Serra. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I'm actually a fan of his because I liked the House of Wax remake.
Sure.
It's not perfect, but I think it's very
Didn't he do Orphan?
Skillfully made. Orphan, I'm just an unequivocal fan
Orphan's
of.
The shit. Orphan's really good.
Orphan's really good.
Yeah.
That movie worried me. I didn't want to see it at first because I'm like, oh, they're going to do a lot of violence against kids. But then they didn't. And I was just like, no, I can love this.
I skipped it in theaters and had it ruined for me by the time I saw it. But it actually still didn't diminish the movie. I still had such a good time with
it. Yeah, it was good. And then Run All Night, I would say, it's just really entertaining. It's kind of a mixture between like Walk Among the Tombstones and Taken, because it's somewhat dramatic and somewhat action based. Good performances. Liam Neeson seems interested, not phoning it in,
right?
Which he was in something like Taken 3. Ed Harris is really good in it. He's kind of he's always interesting in a villain role because he lends some kind of morality to it. So you could tell like this is a career criminal, but he's got, you know, reasons for doing what he does,
right,
and everything like that. So not to get too deep into it, but what should we call it? The only weak spot I think is like Joel Kinnaman is, I'm not sold on Joel Kinnaman.
RoboCop 2.0
star right now. Yeah. RoboCop 2.0.
I've only seen him in that movie.
Yeah. I never saw The Killing, that AMC.
No, I didn't either. And I never saw that series of movies that he was doing.
Oh yeah. I forgot what they were called, though.
Something Easy Money. Was he in the Easy Money movies?
Is that a thing? Elite Squad?
No. I'm going to look it up. You keep talking.
All right. But yeah, it's just a solid middle of the road action movie, but I was surprised how much I liked it. Nick Nolte shows up in one scene and I'm getting to the point in my career where
are those cameras rolling? Am I on a movie
he's
set?
He's in that mode.
Ed Harris, how are you, you son of a bitch?
In that mode in this movie. He's just like, did you tell him about what's going on? And then they're like, you don't even know what's going on. And he's like, why'd you wake me up?
Easy Money is the movie that he was in. For some reason, I thought, yeah, Easy Money and Easy Money 2, Hard to Kill.
Ooh.
And Easy Money 3, Life Deluxe.
Shouldn't it be called Hard Money then?
You would think, right? And supposedly he's the guy that's replacing Tom Hardy in Suicide Squad. Although I feel like every few weeks it's like a new actor is replacing Tom Hardy in Suicide Squad.
Yeah, once I saw there's a casting rumor that Jake Gyllenhaal was going to replace Tom Hardy, I was like, don't do it. You're too good for it.
Yeah.
And I was kind of happy that he didn't do it.
I know nothing about Suicide Squad, but I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued-ish. I like David Ayer. David Ayer is doing it, right?
Do you like him?
I like for End of Watch, and Street Kings is entertaining.
You know, I do like Street Kings. I still haven't seen End of Watch.
Wrote Training Day. Sabotage is garbage.
Sabotage. See, that's the thing that's bumming me out about David Ayer, because I actually thought Fury was like two-thirds of a pretty good movie.
Yeah, Fury was all right.
But man, Sabotage was like so was bad. Taste. Yeah.
Did you ever see Harsh Times? That's the only one of his I think I haven't seen.
No. Because I always confuse it with another movie that came out around the same time called Dirty with Cuba Gooding Jr. maybe and another actor, Clifton Collins. I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah, anyway. Clifton Collins is in both of them.
He's in every fourth movie.
He really is, especially for that time period.
Yeah. We're way off track.
We are. Yeah. This isn't the Clifton Collins cast.
That's next week.
That's everyone. A fun thing to say.
Our
though.
Special guest will be Clifton Collins.
Exactly. I saw What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay.
And this is a movie that I smiled at a lot. I didn't laugh a lot, but I think it was because of the audience I saw it with.
Oh,
and
okay.
This is something that we talked about before we started. If I would have saw this movie at the Music Box, where people were laughing a lot, I think I would have enjoyed it more. But I saw it at Barrington, where there was me and maybe five other people, and we were all like respectfully chuckling.
Right.
And it just, it's the type of movie where I feel like the more I see it, the more I'll like it.
Yes.
It's going to be like The Other Guys, which I think is wonderful now.
Okay.
And the first time I saw it, I was just kind of giggling a little bit. But now I think back on all the Michael Keaton stuff and I just smile and I think it's great. I would recommend seeing What We Do in the Shadows, but maybe see it in like an art house crowd who's kind of hip to what's going on.
I think it's going to hit VOD pretty soon, too. And I think it's a movie that will play well at home. I don't think it's a movie that like you have to see this in theaters.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
Again, it's great to see a comedy in a group. But if you can't, I think it'll still play on VOD.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm familiar with the actors like Jermaine Clement and Rhys Darby. Yeah. I never saw Flight of the Conchords, but I've seen them in enough movies and enjoyed them. And this was very much the same thing. It's just clever. It's kind of cute. It's just a nice little movie.
The kind of the main character played by Taika Waititi,
yeah,
who also co-wrote and directed the movie, made me, if not laugh, then certainly chuckle almost any time he was on screen, just because he has that smile and he's so sincere. And the scene, and I don't think this is spoiling anything, where he's kind of trying to stop some bleeding, that made me laugh harder than anything in the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I laughed the hardest at his last joke at the end of the movie.
Yes.
I won't spoil it, obviously, but it's really, just the way he says it is really great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then speaking of cute movies, I saw a movie that I think, how do I put this? Special interest doesn't quite define, because it's called...
I know what you're talking about.
Because it's a movie I texted you about when I was at the theater to see it. I was definitely the youngest person in the theater to see this movie by about four decades.
And which, to be fair, is almost always true at that theater.
Yes, that's correct. I saw this movie called Deli Man. What is Deli Man, you might ask? Deli Man is a documentary in the vein of a Jiro Dreams of Sushi type, but a little bit maybe lighter even than that, which is kind of hard to think of, about Jewish delicatessens. Why did I see this? The reason being, I really wanted to see a movie last weekend. I had already seen What We Do in the Shadows and Run All Night.
Right. Cinderella? You didn't bite the bullet on Cinderella?
I will at some point, but I feel creepy going to see Cinderella. Yeah, so,
understandable.
So I saw Deli Man because I have a habit every weekend. I'll go to the diner by me and I'll read the newspaper. I'll read the movie section from Friday and I'll stumble across movies every once in a while that just I would have never saw if I didn't read the review for it. But Deli Man sounded interesting. It's the most Jewish fucking movie you'll ever see in your life. There's interviews with Funch Finkel and Jerry Stiller and Larry King. And he's just like, if they don't have the corned beef that I don't like in there, I will not go to that delicatessen again. And it's just amazing. There's like, if you think this joke is funny, this movie will be for you. It's a Jewish lady being like, the matzo ball soup is too salty. And then the deli owner's just like, did you try it? And then she's just like, no, but it looks salty.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
All right.
So if you think that's kind of funny, then you might like this. If you like,
if that doesn't make me want to see it. Am I anti-Semitic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Shit.
It's just like a cute movie. The thing that I like about it is it's not where, at first they bring up a statistic of like, in the 1930s, there were 50,000 delicatessens across the United States, and now there's only 1,500. And I'm like, oh God, is this going to be a Save the Delicatessen
movie? Yes.
But it's not. It's just about like, let's embrace the ones that are still around because it's full of culture and it's full of history and it's a place to mingle and mix and be. It's a fucking piazza.
What is replacing the deli?
I don't know.
Movie didn't cover this?
No, not really.
Oh,
it's just they're going away because they... Well, actually, I take that back. They do cover
what it was. I knew they would be comprehensive
on the
subject of delis.
I mean, the thing ran over 90 minutes, so they really packed a lot of extra info into those 10 minutes. This one guy named Ziggy Gruber, who's kind of the main guy, that he is the proprietor of a Houston deli. He went to a Deli Man conference. Patrick shaking his head no. And at the conference, there were about, he said, like 90% of them were almost like dead, that they like all the owners of the delis. And it's because it was a thing that people owned and operated in the Depression in the 40s because there were a lot of factory workers and the deli was treated like fast food then.
Right.
Whereas now it's $15 for a pastrami sandwich and it's more to a, I guess, not even a highbrow crowd, but I mean, it's just not fast food.
Right, right.
So there was less of a need for it because as these owners were dying off, then, you know, their sons and daughters didn't want to be second generation deli men which I'm not. That's from the movie. I'm not.
I want to be third generation.
There
deli
were
man.
Some. There nice. Were some.
You're third generation deli man. I thought you grew out of cup stuff.
How's the matzo ball soup here? Is it salty? No, but it was a cute movie. It was
all right, good.
And then
cute's good.
I saw It Follows.
Yeah, you did.
Okay. You and I are going to get into a minor disagreement
That's
about
fine.
It. We don't argue. We just get into disagreements respectfully.
That's right.
So, all right. Would you say you love this movie or just like it a lot?
Oh, I like it a lot.
Okay. I think it's pretty good.
Okay.
So
we're not arguing.
No, not at all. But there were things that I read your review and there were things that you said, you know, if you don't like this, you might say it's repetitive or something like that. And that's before I even read your review, because you warned me not to read the review until I saw the movie.
Right.
I thought after it was over, I'm like, well, that was a little repetitive.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to you after the show about it. You were talking about what the movie is trying to say or like subtext.
Yeah.
And outside of the sex stuff, which is kind of on the nose, I think there's something going on there. It doesn't benefit the movie, I think, but it's interesting.
Okay.
But I think it's the thing that I came away with is I really respected the filmmaking. I forgot who directed it. John
something Robert Mitchell? Mitchell. David Robert Mitchell?
David Robert Mitchell. That sounds right. But yeah, like you were mentioning, his use of negative space and like the soundtrack and everything put into the making of the movie. It's Halloween-esque. And
yeah.
It's very, very well done. To me, it just didn't... It's all about kind of the feel of it with a horror movie sometimes. And it didn't scare me, and I didn't find it very suspenseful.
Okay.
So I kind of just sat there more as a, I don't know, like intellectually watching it as opposed to being like really into the experience.
Sure.
But I would definitely recommend going to see it. It's much better than most of the other movies that are out right now.
Yeah.
And there was a theater that they showed in the movie in a scene called the Redford Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I want to go to the Redford Theater. It looks beautiful. It's in Michigan. I looked it up. It's called the Redford Theater in Redford, Michigan. And it looks fantastic. It's got like a Wurlitzer and it's like an old school movie house with like a balcony and everything.
Yeah, I thought it looked kind of like the Paramount in Austin.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And a little bit like the Music Box, actually.
It
some
did.
Of the when they showed them sitting in the seats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, I'm envious of you that you got to see it in a theater.
It was crowded
it at
too.
Home. Yeah, and yeah. I think that's really the way to see it on as big a screen as possible, only because of where your eyes have to move.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The idea that you can't see everything at once on a movie screen, I think would benefit that movie. And if you haven't seen it yet, I don't exactly know what the deal is. Like, there was talk that they were going to open it wider, and I think they still might, but I also think they're going to put it on VOD, which is great if that's the only way you can see it. But if you are able to go, and I know that's super convenient, and it's like, well, I don't have to leave home, and that's great. If you can see it in a theater, I really think it would benefit from seeing it in a theater.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And then this afternoon, I was done with my move and I was enjoying my TV and just kind of sitting back and I'm like, what's on demand? Because there was nothing on cable. So I was choosing between two movies that I'd never seen before. One of them was Working Girl and the other one was Deep Cover. So I chose Deep Cover.
Okay.
So I watched Deep Cover and
I like both of those movies.
I
haven't seen
know.
Deep Cover in a long time.
Yeah, those were two on my bucket list, so to speak. But I always,
knock off Working Girl and you can die.
I can. It's sad. I'll never watch Working Girl. I'm not going to watch it until I'm like in the hospital on my deathbed.
His last words were, let the river run.
Yeah, I'll be like, is that Dakota Johnson's mother?
Too salty.
Did you see the interview with them on the Oscars red carpet?
No.
It was really funny. It was like the weekend 50 Shades of Grey opened like a couple weeks after. And this reporter asked Melanie Griffith, they're like, have you seen it? And she's like, no, and I will not see it. And then Dakota Johnson's like, you might see it one day. And she's just like, no. And then Dakota Johnson was just like, God, you don't have to be like that now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was funny.
Mom, you made Milk Money.
Argument. Yeah.
Don't act like you're too good.
Money. Yes. I had to go on the set to Milk Money. So Deep Cover, I thought was, I was really into it for the first two thirds.
Okay.
It's very eclectic and lively, and there's, I'm trying to avoid the use of the word colorful. There was a lot of, it was very unpredictable. It was, there's a line in the movie where Jeff Goldblum's wife, who's a minor character, she says, you know, what's wrong? You've got a wife that loves you, a daughter that loves you. What's the matter? And he says, I want to have my cake and eat it too. And I'm kind of like, this is a movie that's sort of having its cake and eating it too, in the sense that it's adhering to this undercover cop movie. Mm-hmm. It's going across that formula, but it's got a lot of like interesting stuff around the edges.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more fun and more peppy than some of those other movies.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I took away from it for the most part. Like I said, the ending didn't really, the last maybe like 20, 30 minutes didn't really do it for me, but it was okay at that point. This is Lawrence Fishburne in his period between Boys in the Hood and What's Love Got to Do with It, where he was really just nailing it. And Jeff Goldblum, I haven't seen him like this in a movie before.
No, that's my greatest memory of the movie, because it's been a long time, is that he just crushes it in that movie.
Yeah, and it's a very well-done three-dimensional character where he's kind of like somebody who you think is too nice to be in this drug game. And then like by the end of it, you can see just like beat by beat how he got to the point that he got to. And it's really just a strong performance, because I think we lose track sometimes of Jeff Goldblum from The Fly or from like Deep Cover, because he's become so many like tics and mannerisms and kind of like a parody of a Jeff Goldblum performance.
Yeah, he's become like an internet meme now.
Yeah, a little bit like a Nicolas Cage
the
Diet Coke version of Nicolas Cage. But no, this was a real, real nice Sunday afternoon watch. So
right on.
If you have Cinemax on demand, it's,
and who doesn't?
It's on there.
Who doesn't? Yeah. You should watch Working Girl. It's good.
I will.
You don't have to die afterwards.
Thanks.
Watching Working Girl is like having sex in It Follows. It's
so what's the difference? Like, how does it backslide? Explain that to me.
I don't know.
So it's like the person who recommended Working Girl to you.
I guess.
So if I don't, If I watch Working Girl, then like something will follow me until I get somebody else to watch Working Girl.
Exactly.
So this is your
plan. I'm trying to get you to watch it so that it stops.
So it stops following
you. It's been
you.
Following me since around 1990. Yeah. So it's been a rough 25 years. Good Lord.
I'm sorry.
I'll talk quickly about a few things that I've watched recently. I got to see a movie called Kill Me Three Times, which is an Australian noir movie. Simon Pegg with the big gun. I'm sure you've seen the picture.
Yeah.
He plays a hitman, and a star-studded cast that includes Teresa Palmer.
I like her.
Who's a fox. Sure, she actually gets to be Australian in this movie. Alice Braga. I mean, who doesn't love Alice Braga? I Am Legend's Alice Braga. And, of course, Luke Hemsworth, better known as Harpo Hemsworth. I don't have a ton of nice stuff to say about it. Like, it was watchable, but I just don't understand how it got made after 1998. Like, it is 2 days in the valley. You know what I mean? It's like,
just stop at Harpo Hemsworth.
Yeah, right. It is. It is 2 days. It's 2 days in the. It's like every post Tarantino movie that came out in the mid to late 90s.
Yep.
This feels like, or kind of like The Big Bounce. It's just like, do we need exactly? But like, the movies that it reminded me of were 2 days in the valley and The Big Bounce.
Okay.
So do we need that movie? Probably not. Right.
No.
We can just go back and watch all of the better movies that this movie is kind of ripping off.
Was it diverting at least, or was it just a complete waste of time?
It's, I don't want to say it's a complete waste of time, but it's also a little bit repetitive. Like, it has this structure where it's like, kill me once, kill me twice, kill me three times. And each time we're kind of seeing the same events, but we get more backstory.
Okay.
So
save your money for Deli Man.
Did not love it. Definitely see Deli Man instead, or Working Girl. If any of you guys have not seen this movie, Working Girl, I really encourage any of you to please see Working Girl. Please watch it.
Oh God.
I saw Merchants of Doubt, which is a newish documentary about.
Oh, I know what this is. They had a preview for it before Deli Man.
Of course they did. Yeah. It's kind of about the backlash to climate change.
Yeah.
And the sort of lobbyists who make money off of trying to cast doubt on the science behind climate change.
Yep.
It's infuriating. It's mostly well done. You hear these people interviewed, and you, I guess, you're of one of two minds about it. You see it, and you say, oh, my gosh, who would ignore these scientists who have worked so hard and know exactly what they're talking about and have data to back it up? Or you're somebody who says, like, what a bunch of liars, and I don't understand you if you're the second person. At one point, one of these disbelievers, I guess, is literally handed a stack of reports about the size of a phone book that has tons of data and science about climate change. And he picks it up and he throws it behind him. And that is the whole movement in a nutshell. I'm going to ignore the facts and just believe this thing that I want to believe. So it was infuriating, well done, but also has this kind of annoying habit of, like, so many documentaries now, they're not content to, like, just interview people.
Okay.
So it opens
graphics?
No graphics, no cartoons, luckily. Okay. But it opens with a magician describing magic tricks and the art of misdirection and trying to fool people.
Okay. Like, you wouldn't get it if you didn't have that.
And I mean, every once in a while, it literally will cut to, like, a slow motion shot of a deck of cards falling. It's like, no, we got it. We're okay without the metaphor and the constant reminder of the magic trick.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit over the top, but that's pretty minor. I think the movie's worth seeing.
What other documentaries did these people do?
I don't know. I'll tell you in a second.
It wasn't like an Errol Morris or...
it wasn't a name that I recognized, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't have a lot of Food Inc.
Okay.
Was, I guess, his last...
I never saw Food Inc.
I didn't either, because I saw like four different food documentaries and I just got tired of, like, yes, everything is bad. Yes.
I saw Fast Food Nation opening night.
The Linklater movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, there were seats to be found.
There were? I think I saw it the next morning, if that helps, Saturday morning.
This is what... Oh, God. All right, real quick digression. When I saw that opening night, it was the same night that Casino Royale opened, but I promised my dad I would wait till Sunday morning to see that.
You're a good
and
son.
I just could, I was just, like, cussing myself out while I was walking into Fast Food Nation.
It's
like,
not the worst movie.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
There's things to like in it.
It's like... Not Casino Royale.
It's not Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Please. I saw a movie called Avenged, a.k.a. Savaged. Was recommended to me by one of our readers and listeners, Chaby, who is great and has turned me on to a number of good independent horror films.
Yeah.
He sees a lot.
Chaby's the best. He really hates The Wolf of Wall Street, and we got into a really good conversation about it.
Sure.
Yeah, and that was my favorite movie of that year, and we had, I think I had, like, the best conversation I've had about that movie just with him.
Yeah.
And we had completely just opposite side of the fence, because we just, I thought it was really funny, and he didn't think it was funny.
Right,
And stuff. And yeah, it was, he's very thoughtful in his comments. Yeah.
So he was turning me on to this. I wish I could say I liked it more. And I think part of it is just, I'm a little bit burned out on kind of, like, I'm a big fan of revenge movies, and this is very much a revenge movie.
Yeah.
A deaf mute girl is attacked and left for dead or possibly even killed, and then is possessed by the spirit of a Native American and then seeks revenge on her attackers.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I love revenge movies, I'm not a fan of, like, the rape revenge. And while this is never necessarily graphic about the rape part, it was very much in that spirit. And it's a weird thing, because I think part of it is just, I haven't trained myself to watch a movie like this that is new.
Mm-hmm.
Post Grindhouse, because even though that movie made no money, it really did kind of change the landscape of movie making, because there's all these filmmakers now who are making modern day exploitation movies. And that's kind of what this is. So I wonder if this movie had actually come out in 1976 and I was just catching up with it, would I like it more? I haven't trained myself to like get on board with the mix of tones and some of the things that this movie does, because it is so new. It just wasn't for me.
All right. I'm going to say this even though I only half mean it a little bit. Have you ever kind of done that where you're like,
of course.
All right. So
literally every podcast.
Okay. With It Follows, I think one thing that like slightly bugs me, not about the movie itself, but about like what it represents, which is this kind of fake grindhouse thing. I'm really tired of like filmmakers doing that, and I kind of want them just to do something new as opposed to harken back to what worked in the past.
Oh, I don't. I didn't think that about It Follows.
I didn't think it. It's funny because like the movie itself, there's nothing wrong with it, and it's a very well-made version of that type of movie, of kind of like a callback to earlier John Carpenter type stuff, but. At the same time, I just am like, come on, let's break some ground here. Let's do something new, like in the early 90s or late 80s again. And I just feel like a lot of independent filmmakers are maybe too influenced by films of the past. And I just wish there were more voices that just had conviction to kind of go their own way.
Sure.
So I don't know. I half believe that.
The last movie I was going to talk about, I'll probably skip.
Talk about it.
Well, it's an old movie, and you have said your piece about it. No, I know you do, but you've already said your piece about it. I thought about bringing it up.
Which one?
Because I just rewatched Alien.
Let's talk about Alien.
My plan was, we need to talk about Backdraft. My plan was to, so I read this whole long article about the Alien attack ride from Disney World. That no longer exists. Now it's like Stitch's Great Adventure.
Okay.
And it's this long history of like what happened, how it was developed, how it changed, what it became.
Yeah.
I never went on the ride.
I did.
Because I don't think I was ever at Disney when it was open.
I remember liking it. I don't remember it too well. It was what, like early 90s?
Maybe? Late 90s, early 2000s maybe?
Okay.
I think.
All right.
Erica did, and she's always talked about it because she loved it. And I've always said, I would never go on that because I don't like to be scared in real life. And she gives me a hard time all the time. She's like, but you watch the most fucked up stuff in movies. It's like, that's very different.
You would hate Shrek 4D.
Right. Well, I've been on Shrek 4D. So her memory of it was that it was the alien from Aliens, right?
Yeah.
And it actually wasn't. It was supposed to be, and then that got changed.
Okay.
And it was just this made up other alien. But reading this article made me want to go back and go through. And I've done this 4 times already. And it's the same thing that happens with X-Files, where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go into my Alien box set and watch every version of all 4 movies, all the special features. I'm going to listen to the commentaries. I'm going to watch the documentaries. Like, I'm really going to become as well versed as I can be in this series because I'm super interested in it. Mm-hmm. And then I always make it through Alien. Part of Aliens, and then like I gotta move on.
Yeah.
And so every time I go to do it again, I end up just rewatching Alien, basically, and that's as far as I get. It's like I've seen season 1 of X-Files 4 times, and I've never made it further. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't like it. So I rewatched Alien, and I know I had tweeted out that every time I watch it, I like it more, and that is true. I think watching it this time, I liked it more than I have ever liked it. And I know that you have said it just kind of leaves you cold.
Yes.
And that's totally understandable. I'm not telling you you're wrong at all. For a long time, that was kind of my feeling about it. Mm-hmm. And it was really only on the last few viewings that I was, because there are movies where I can just appreciate the filmmaking, kind of like you were talking about with It Follows even.
Yeah.
But I still just kind of remain outside of the film. And this time, for whatever reason, I wasn't. And some of it was, I was appreciating the filmmaking to such a degree that it actually pulled me into the movie. And then some of it was, for the first time, I found myself connecting with some of the characters, which I haven't really in the past.
Okay. Yeah, I want to like it real bad.
Yeah.
I want to be on the side of good. But
well, we all have those movies.
Yeah, it's just something that I don't even feel like I need to get into it. It's just whatever. If you If you love Alien, love Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, whatever. If I don't know. Maybe that's like a Scary Movie Month show we could talk about Alien.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I had always just been under the impression that as much as I like Alien, I probably preferred Aliens.
Yeah, that's how how I've always been. I've really liked Aliens, but
now I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
I might like the first one better. But you got to be in the right mood to watch it. See, like Aliens, yeah. I could watch almost any day.
Mm-hmm.
Alien, I really got to be in the right mood for it because it's very slow.
Yes.
And quiet.
I think that if I saw it in 1979, I would have loved it.
World of difference.
But by the time I caught up with it, I think was like 93 or 94.
Yeah.
And it at that point, it's like somebody telling you how McDonald's tastes.
Yeah, I mean, right, it's, right. Its biggest scene is parodied in Spaceballs, you know? Like, we can't appreciate what that movie must have been like in 1979. That's what you're talking about when you're saying, like, hey, horror filmmakers, do something totally new and totally different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's Alien. Yep. Like, going to see that movie in 79, I don't think anybody was prepared for that.
Yep.
Anyway, should we talk about Backdraft?
I'd love to.
All right.
Yes.
You had suggested that we talk about Backdraft.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever done a Ron Howard movie, so this is exciting. So.
Okay.
For whatever reason, in the summer of 1991, it must have been like my first real taste of independence because I saw every movie that came out, several of them, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw Terminator 2 multiple times. I saw Point Break a handful of times.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
I saw Robin Hood a couple times. I saw Naked Gun 2.5 more than once.
Yep.
I must have seen Backdraft 6 times in the theaters.
In the theater?
Yep.
Oh.
In 91. Part of that was because I had a friend. We liked to go to movies together. He had a mom who would like drive us to the mall. So we just kept going back to see Backdraft. Part of it was like maybe a year after my parents split for good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go like once with my mom and then once with my dad. And my mom and I didn't go to the movies together that often.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember going to see Backdraft the Saturday it opened at that big Woodfield theater in 70 millimeter.
Yeah.
And loving the movie and just having that memory of seeing it on a hot Saturday afternoon with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, I think, of going back was that attempt to I was chasing the experience more than I was chasing the movie.
Okay.
Because say what you will about the movie, and we will. In 70 millimeter, I mean, those fire sequences were unbelievable.
Yes.
I mean, just amazing, amazing stuff. So I think I was chasing that. So I saw this movie a bunch and then taped it off a pay-per-view as a kid. Haven't watched it in years. So this was my first viewing in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, this was my first viewing in, it has to be 15 years at least.
It's probably about the same for me.
So my history of it was a little bit different. I saw it on cable, like right when it first premiered on the premium channels. I'm thinking it was on Showtime because there's a line in the movie where he's like, it's Showtime. And I'm like, is that a tag for Showtime? I'm Bill Curtis and Bill Harris in Hollywood and we'll talk again. So points to anybody who remembers that motherfucker.
Yikes.
Backdraft was an example of a movie that my parents would go on their date nights to see, and I would be like eagerly awaiting for them to come home so I can ask them about Backdraft.
Okay.
I would always ask them what trailers played before the movie. Did you get me a movie brochure? Like the movie facts brochure.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what happened at the end? I was a weird kid.
Yeah.
I always wanted to know what happened at the end.
You were at such an advantage because your parents loved each other.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's all right.
They're still together.
Way to rub it in, dude.
You're welcome. it's like that line in Neighbors that I find hilarious where he's like, they might get divorced. This is really dark, dude. And he's like, well, my parents are still together, and I think it's hilarious.
That is a funny line.
Yeah. So, spoiler for the end of Backdraft.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be spoiling Backdraft if you've never seen it, everyone. The movie is...
So, my dad says...
25 years old?
Yeah.
24.
24.
24 years
this
old.
This summer, it'll be 24 years old. So, my dad says, Kurt Russell dies. And I was like... Still at the age where I did not understand that heroes died in movies sometimes.
Right, right.
And I kind of was like, how did you let this happen? I was really, like, unhinged by it. I thought it was really
did
weird.
Did he at least, like, take the sting out by saying, but Jason Gedrick lives. Jason Gedrick's okay.
We'll get to Tim. we're going to talk about.
Check that door for heat.
Fucking Tim. You check this show for heat? Because there's fucking heat coming. I'm winding up. Here's the pitch. Do you remember the trailer for Backdraft?
Yes, because I saw it 100 times.
Before Kindergarten Cop on VHS?
Before every movie that came out in 1991, apparently, okay. And 1990. And because I love it
it's
and
a
had it
trailer.
Memorized. And a few years ago when we did the 91 mm-hmm. for FS Movie Fest, we didn't watch Backdraft because it's not right for that kind of thing. But I put together a trailer compilation that I don't think we ended up watching because I couldn't
no,
get it
I
to work.
Watching
no, because it would never work. I have not figured out the technology. The point is this. I watched it 50 times because I love the trailer so much. And that music is so great.
I watched the trailer again on YouTube. I also watched the Universal Studios attraction on YouTube.
Which I did not like.
Yeah.
I need that said.
I like the...
Even the fake fire is scary to me.
Oh, I loved it.
No,
I thought it was
scary.
I thought it was a great attraction.
One little thing can go wrong.
Replaced by Transformers in 2010. But, yeah,
I don't like the
no,
Twister
right.
ride either.
You're right about the one thing going wrong.
Yes.
I mean, like, that seems very
Why
dangerous.
Put yourself in that position?
Yeah. My favorite part was after all of the explosions,
yeah.
how they set it all back up again. And you could stay
right.
there and watch
right.
them set it
right.
all back up. I thought
My
that
favorite
was
part was seeing Scott Glenn fall from the top.
He should fall from the top in everything.
You go, we go.
Yeah.
But you go way harder, Scott Glenn.
Oh, God. He, like, hit his back on a chemical barrel.
It's really like, well, he's the bad guy, so
yeah.
we got to punish him.
Well, he also is responsible for getting the dad killed at the beginning of the movie, which I didn't remember until this viewing. Because, you know...
Because he pushes him out at the gas line.
Which
and...
is so funny. That line reading just cracks me up. And, well, maybe... We should start there.
Okay.
The beginning of the... I say the beginning, maybe 15 minutes of this movie are hysterically bad.
Yeah.
It
just have... I think the decision to cast Kurt Russell as his own dad, I think, is a mistake.
That's ridiculous.
I think
like,
it's a
we
mistake.
Wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
If he didn't cast himself
that because
as
we're
dad.
Reminded of that for yeah. the entire movie. That magazine yeah. cover comes up.
Yes. Unbelievably, because it's a Life magazine from 1972 that apparently everybody in Chicago still has a copy
Who
of.
Who could forget it?
Yeah. Also,
I wish Kurt Russell's head was still in the helmet when it bounced to the kid's feet.
That would be hilarious. Would
very
be
different. Very different opening.
I always thought it was weird, too, because like Scott Glenn is responsible for hitting the gas line and getting his dad, getting little William Baldwin's dad killed.
Right.
But then he runs out and like his first reaction is to hug him. I'm
yeah.
just like, that's yeah. kind of weird. I'm like, if you just killed my dad in Backdraft, I would not want to hug you right now.
I need to quickly point out that yeah. the name of little William Baldwin, the real kid's name who plays, did you see what his real name is?
No.
It would be Beep Iams. Beep. Like Beep. Hey, Beep.
So they had stupid fucking names even back in 91.
We got to go again, Beep.
Is he heir to the Iams dog food fortune?
He was in this movie and The Babe 1 year later, where he played Boy at St. Mary's.
Did he drop the mic?
And then
after
he
that?
Was out of acting forever.
Wow.
Beep Iams is now a professional killer.
Yeah, yeah.
I want this guy dead.
Well, he killed him.
You
that
gotta
scene.
Get Beep.
Yeah, he's like, motherfucker, I've trained them all. Beep Iams. Oscar
you won't,
O'Brien.
You won't hear this beep coming.
Yeah, it's just like I'll end your career fucking faster than I ended that Beep Iams career.
Once you hear the beep, you're dead. Beep Iams, professional killer.
Yeah, so that seems terrible. It's just the way it's shot and directed is just so hokey and ridiculous.
But that's the whole movie, okay? And I don't know if because I was like 13, if I hadn't lived enough. I hadn't seen enough movies. I wasn't fazed by all that stuff.
Well, I wasn't back then either.
But I mean, this movie, like...
Can I talk about just one more scene
No, go ahead.
The scene right after that, it cuts to a fire or a bar, of the fireman bar. And they're shooting off fire extinguishers in the bar while all the probies are getting their station assignments. There's a Greek woman yelling at William Baldwin outside the bar. And I'm just like, what kind of hysterical movie is this?
Chicago. See, he's really setting up what Chicago is like. He's really getting a feel for the city.
For Southside Chicago,
I will say, though, as a Chicagoan, I mean...
They get a lot... It looks like Chicago.
It's a great Chicago movie,
It looks like Chicago in 1991 for sure.
Yeah.
Because I went down to, like, Comiskey Park a lot at the time, and that's what the Southside of Chicago looked like, for sure.
It's cool to see them out on
it's
the streets.
It's really neat. And, it's like a little time capsule. It's kind of, it's very cool from that regard. But just... And then... Maybe we could talk about Tim now. He's like hooting and hollering, and he's like
he's the cocky, excited young firefighter.
But he's excited like while people like have died.
Yeah, because he loves this job.
He's a fucking asshole, and I'm glad that he got burned.
Well, yeah,
because hubris.
He only has himself to blame, right? Although, I mean, in the movie is quick to
door for heat,
and the movie is quick to point the finger at Kurt Russell. But I mean, Kurt Russell did say like. Stay by me. Check the door for heat.
Oh,
and he didn't. He didn't. But really, it's Scott Glenn's fault.
Steven had that fire by the balls.
All right. Hold on. So this movie is super, like, the thing that was great about Ron Howard for a little while. Okay. And I don't know that I would call any of his movies great. I think Apollo 13 comes the closest. I mean, that movie's really good. But, like, it's just a movie that to me is, like, really good in kind of a classical way.
That's his best movie.
Yeah. Hands down. And I would say, actually, from that point on, he makes mostly bad movies.
There's four that I've liked since Apollo 13. I made a list.
Four since Apollo 13?
Yes.
Okay. We'll get to this.
Sure.
We'll come right back to this. So what I liked about him early on was that he did kind of these ensemble movies, right? So he does Parenthood. He does Backdraft. He does The Paper.
Yeah.
He does Apollo 13. I mean, he does really good kind of ensemble movies.
Yep.
And they're very...
Diverse.
They're very diverse, and that's one of the things about Ron Howard is, like, he has no style. That you can't tell what a Ron Howard movie is.
He's like one of those studio directors
from like, the 40s. Exactly,
yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what he brings to a movie like Backdraft. So it's super old-fashioned, which I like. I mean, that's part of its charm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has the amazing bench of cast from like a 70s disaster movie, right? I mean,
it has a really good cast.
So many people. Yeah. Everybody is somebody. Everybody is like, hey, I'm happy to see this guy show up.
Mm-hmm.
It's also part of the movie's problem because the cast is so big, because it's trying to service so many things.
Mm.
Everything gets kind of short shrifted. So you have Kurt Russell's conflict with William Baldwin, but then you also have his situation with Rebecca De Mornay, but then you also have him as a firefighter. And William Baldwin has the stuff at his job, and he's got the Kurt Russell stuff, and he's got the Jennifer Jason Leigh stuff, and then Robert De Niro shows up, and it's a murder mystery.
It's a real soap opera.
It tries to do too many things. And I really loved Backdraft in 91, and I remember Roger Ebert's review. He gave it like a 2.5 star, maybe 3.
I think it was 3.
Okay. And he was like, amazing fire sequences.
Yeah.
But it gets bogged down in all this dumb murder mystery plot. And at the time I was like, no, that's fine. And no, he's absolutely right. So maybe I just needed to grow up more because.
See, all right. Because I had a problem with the murder mystery. Here's what I wrote. My first note that I wrote down was good action, bad drama.
Sure.
I think that sums up my feeling about it. If I had to succinctly sum up my feelings about the movie, anything fire related, those sequences, if you can take yourself out of the fact that none of them are going to die from smoke inhalation, because apparently that's like not going to phase Kurt Russell in this movie, which is unbelievable because he's always running into fires, sometimes with his helmet even off.
Then we see his face.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure the action is good. Like, the photography is great. Mm-hmm. Some of the action, I think, is really great. And one of the things I really liked was how many times you can see that it's really these actors.
Yes.
Such a big difference, right? When William Baldwin at the end does his backwards fall in that wide shot where it's like head to toe. And you can see it's William Baldwin's face. He jumps backwards. He lands on his back. Not a huge stunt, but they get stunt credits. William Baldwin, Kurt Russell, Scott Glenn.
Yeah.
Have stunt credits during the end credits. And I was like, that's awesome.
That is awesome.
That's really cool. And it makes a difference. Again, if you can tell that it's the actors, it gives it this immediacy. We're not always taken out like, this is second unit. This is a stuntman.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys that were in their crew, I think, were real firefighters and not actors, too. So that helps also. But that cinematographer you mentioned, I'm glad you did, because I wrote down, his name's Michael Solomon. He also shot The Abyss and Far and Away. And so those are two really, whatever you say about Far and Away, it's a great looking movie.
Yeah. Again, played in 70 millimeter.
And then he directed A Far Off Place and Hard Rain.
Oh, Hard Rain I've seen. Drops the mic. I have not seen A Far Off Place.
Yeah.
The Abyss, very difficult movie to shoot. Yep. Backdraft, I assume, very difficult movie to shoot. So good on this guy.
They said that he was in a flame retarded suit and they just threw him into it.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, here, take the camera right into the thick of it. And I mean, it's
and that is one of the amazing things about the movie.
Not nominated for best cinematography.
Well, whatever. The amazing thing about the movie are those fire sequences and the fire photography. The reason I say maybe bad action is because I just think and it's indicative of a larger problem with the movie, which again I still basically like.
Yeah.
Probably just nostalgia speaking, but Ron Howard's over reliance on slow motion, on money shots, on hero worship.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think that bogs the movie down a little bit. He clearly made the movie as this love letter to firemen. And this movie will convince you that firemen are the real heroes, right? And they are. Like, I am not here to say anything remotely bad about firemen. They do things that I cannot believe. They save lives. They are legitimate heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, in trying to be so reverential to firemen, I think it gets in the way of the filmmaking because
I don't feel like this movie's that reverential to them.
Are you kidding me?
I think that it is reverential.
There is B-roll of Ron Howard blowing a line of firemen.
All right. Okay. Are you saying that because you saw the introduction with Ron Howard on the DVD where he's just like,
old DVD.
He's like, I cannot walk past a firehouse without them offering me a cup of coffee.
And that's great. And the thing is, it's like, so of course, firemen go see this movie and they're like, this is great. Like how we're being represented on screen and it gets so many things right. But at the same time, it gets so many things wrong. Like the fact that you couldn't ever see anything in these fires because it would be filled with smoke.
I don't think it's. I didn't see the reverential version of the movie that you did because I feel the same way that you're saying about Backdraft, about Ladder 49.
I have not seen Ladder 49.
Ladder 49 is...
Because I saw Backdraft and I felt like there was no need.
It's fucking ridiculous with the hero worship in that movie. That movie's so
much... Did that
much
come out after 9/11?
Yeah.
I wonder if that had anything to do with it.
It could be.
Yeah.
It came out like 2004, I think.
Okay. I mean, that has to have something to do with it, because as much as we were like, firemen are heroes, post 9/11, it was like, oh my God, firemen are heroes.
My problem less with the reverential stuff is, well, I mean, like, there is that montage that's pretty god-awful. Where
one thing that firemen do
the show
is
goes on
rescue
by
chickens.
Bruce Hornsby.
Yeah.
And then they have the fire hydrant porn where they're, like, taking water and, like, dumping it on their heads, and it's just like, oh God, I want to dump water on my head and be macho too.
I don't know if it was Ron Howard's. I think this movie is insanely reverential to firemen.
Okay.
But maybe that's not guiding every decision. Maybe it is like, hey, we're getting this footage that no one's really gotten before, and it's really these actors doing it. And so I want to make sure that the audience sees all that. So he just slows everything down. All of the fire sequences are just bursting with slow motion. And I think at times it becomes melodramatic and very, very kind of hokey when Kurt Russell is bursting through the door in a medium shot holding
with
a small black child. Right. It's like they might as well just put hero worship or, you know, hero shot text on the screen. And again, he is a hero.
Did you know
the movie has already established that he's a hero. So to do like hero porn is I think more than this movie needs.
You know that iconic poster?
Yes.
All right. So with the frame of the firemen all in black coming out of the inferno, That actually is the official license plate of California firefighters.
Really?
So, Doug, look out for that.
All right.
No, so, yeah, I mean, I agree with you to a certain extent. I forgot about the child being carried out.
Oh, boy.
I have more of a problem with... On the whole, I think the fire sequence in the garment factory and the fire sequence at the end in the chemical factory are unbelievable.
Yes.
I think they're fantastic yes. action sequences. And that's why I say this is a good action movie. If you watch it for that and kind of can turn a blind eye to the murder mystery and to the relationship drama and the sibling rivalry, which is a lot of the movie.
It's trying to just do so much.
Then you'll come away liking it. And I think... On the whole, like this is an entertaining trash picture. It's really fun, and I think I agree with you. Like, part of my affection for it is nostalgia. Yes. If I saw it, if this was a new movie in 2015, I probably wouldn't like it all that much. But
it wants to be
still
important.
With it a little bit,
you know what I mean? Like, it really wants to be important.
Yeah.
And again, as a kid, I was like, yeah, it is important because the movie's telling me that it's important with the music and the photography and these very serious performances. And it's obviously about this subject that we all look up to. And I respect the fact that it would not get made today. In this iteration, it just would not. With the number of stars that are in the movie, the fact that it has an R rating. Mm-hmm.
Practical effects.
I mean, Ladder 49 got made, but it's Backdraft Light, correct?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's PG-13. It's Backdraft Light.
And you have John Travolta and Joaquin Phoenix, and that's it.
They repeat a lot of the same types of beats from the movie, where it's you get the camaraderie in the firehouse scene. You get they're at their kid's party scene. You're at the they're fixing the roof. It's all that stuff.
And this is the definitive fireman movie. I mean, you ask any fireman, they'll be like, oh yeah, Backdraft, even though there have been other fireman movies. The way that like Top Gun is the definitive fighter pilot movie, even though you know, there's Iron Eagle starring Jason Gedrick and Chappie Sinclair, but so this, I mean, kind of has the last word, you know, until somebody else makes a really good fireman movie.
I'm convinced that if you asked...
I should be saying firefighter, not fireman. I apologize.
Firefighter.
I apologize.
If you ask five firefighters, what's the definitive firefighter movie? They would go, Backdraft. Fireproof. Backdraft.
I forgot about Fireproof. I like, you know, the little touches that feel like they come from... having real firefighters on set, technical advisors, whatever. Yep. I love when Scott Glenn shatters the window of the car to put the hose through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the shot of him lighting the cigarette after he comes out of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
There are little touches like that throughout that I really like. I, you know, and then I think sometimes the movie invents... I mean, I live in Chicago, and we have enormous building fires... once a year, maybe twice a year.
Yeah, I can think
this movie has them like on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I understand for drama, they can't just have, you know, like they have to. And then there's a murder plot. So I guess there are more fires than usual. I don't know.
Although I thought it was weird because, like, you know how they say that backdrafts are backdrafts because they blow themselves out.
Right.
The first one was still on fire. So it didn't really blow itself.
Well, he hadn't learned how to do it yet. He was getting better.
I guess
De Niro has such a thankless role in this movie.
De Niro's so good in this movie.
And yet he's awesome. That's exactly where I was going with this.
Yeah.
Like, that role didn't require a Robert De Niro. But
he's based on a real guy.
Who is in the...
Remgale.
Who has a part in the movie, because I saw the name in the credits.
Yeah.
I don't know who he played.
I don't remember who he played either, so I am letting you down on that one.
That's okay.
But,
I saw Rimgale in the credits, though.
But he's the guy in the movie that feels like a real person who has lived before this movie has started.
And who does a job...
An interesting job.
Who does an interesting job, but without giving it... I mean, it's not that he doesn't give it a sense of importance. It just feels like this guy lives... a life and does a job, but it's not. I mean, Kurt Russell's like approach to firefighting is like Shakespearean,
right? It's a lifestyle. I agree with you because there's something sad about De Niro's character where he wanted to be a fireman for longer, but due to injury, he had to take a back seat, and he kind of realizes that he's the best at what he does.
Right.
That he's really good at what he does. And it's the old Hitchcock thing that people love seeing somebody who's good at their job.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do pick up on something that there's kind of like a sense of, you know, his time came too early for him.
Right.
To it. So all the scenes with De Niro, even though the murder mystery doesn't work, those are my favorite scenes in the movie, even more than the fire action set pieces. I just think that he's so good in the movie.
Yeah.
I would love to, I'm not saying I would love to see a spinoff of like Backdraft with just his character.
Maybe
especially
a TV show.
Especially now, because he'd be like
the Rimgale Chronicles.
Like, they're a firefucker. I mean, like, I don't want to see that, but at 91, De Niro was still bringing it.
And again, this role doesn't require a Robert De Niro. You know what I mean? Like, but the fact that he's in it, A, lends the movie kind of a greater credibility. It's just like, look at the cast they have and Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
But also, he's so good that he makes those scenes work. And he's just playing a normal guy. It's not De Niro, like, doing a bunch of weird stuff.
Yeah.
He's just playing a guy, and he delivers the dialogue really, really well and doesn't push it and doesn't oversell it. You know, the movie is filled with actors who are overqualified for the parts that they get. J.T. Walsh is great because he shows up and you're like, oh, he's a slimeball. No matter what, he's always going to be a slimeball, and he conveys that immediately. Mm-hmm. Rebecca De Mornay, overqualified for what she's asked to do, which is just like the worried wife. However, I think her reaction during the funeral, it's a silent reaction when they hand her the flag, is unbelievable.
Doesn't she just kind of like tremble and cry a little bit?
But tries not to.
Yeah.
It's all just done on her face. But I just think it's really, really good because obviously her relationship with Kurt Russell is very complicated.
Yeah.
And so what she's going through is very complicated.
There's a scene in this movie that choked me up, and it's a weird scene. And I think it just is because I'm dealing with my own shit.
All right.
But like, I feel like every once in a while it's okay to open up if a movie kind of got to you. It snuck up on you for a second. And there's a scene where Kurt Russell is drunk and shows up at Rebecca De Mornay's doorstep. And he has it's funny because I don't think this is a really well-written movie. And it's kind of a half-formed idea. But even like that idea, they get it across enough where it really kind of hit me was... he says, basically, like, I don't think the guys believe in me anymore. And he just kind of wants somebody to lend him some credibility and believe in him still. And he's talking kind of dually to his wife. He kind of wants his wife back and everything like that. And it's basically like everybody's given up on him and they've turned their back and everything. And I thought it was supposed to be loyalty, and I thought it was supposed to be forever. And I've had situations in my life where I've had close friends or girlfriends where I thought things would really work out, and then when, you know, say my friends got married, they just decided they only hang out with married friends, or like a girlfriend that I thought I was gonna marry, like she broke up with me and stuff like that. And I've had such like sadness over those moments that when I saw Kurt Russell's character going through that, it made me just like really just kind of, it just hit me really hard. So that scene I think is just really kind of beautiful. But it's not something that's really fully explored, but I almost think to the service, I think not really kind of just, you know, really laying it on maybe makes it more effective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wish the movie would have done more of that, because those moments where it doesn't lay it on so thick, it works and it's good. However, it just has a propensity to lay it on so much of the time, so you get William Baldwin shouting lines like, I'm not gonna quit, you hear me?
Oh,
or I was doing it, I was up there doing it, you don't know what I did. I told you I've seen this movie a lot. I was.
How about not one drill for the company and one for me?
What What would Backdraft sound like?
Roll the goddamn hose.
With the if it had been recast by Michael Rapaport.
He would be like, he'd be like, how about not one drill for me, bro, and not one drill for the company, yo.
Roll the goddamn hose, Proby.
All right, yeah. So.
I'm a smoke eater.
The scene that I was moved by today. Yeah. Was after Rebecca De Mornay and Kurt Russell make love, reconciliatory love.
Yes.
He is with his son making breakfast, and she comes down and is like, you gotta go. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the you gotta go part that made me sad. It was the watching him and his son make breakfast. And maybe it was because I knew that it was temporary, that it was like, you gotta go. He thinks in that moment that he has his life back.
Yeah.
And he finds out. It was 2 minutes later, you just got to pretend thing. For this morning. And I am terrified of divorce. I will not get divorced. My wife and I are great. We don't fight. You know, we're great. So this is not me saying, like, things are in a weird place and we might divorce at all. But having seen it around me, like, the whole idea makes me sad. The idea of, like, only getting to see my son on a weekend or something breaks my heart. And so I was putting myself in his position in that scene.
Yeah.
And it just feels awful.
And he even talks about that earlier. He says one of the reasons why he's fixing up the boat is because he thinks it's something him and his son could do on weekends.
Yeah. It's just so sad.
It is.
Divorce really is rough.
I think, a lot of it is just the sheer talent, star power, charisma of Kurt Russell.
The man can do no wrong.
He's awesome.
Let's face it. Kurt Russell can do no wrong.
He is so awesome that I barely question the fact that he decided to be the only actor to commit to a Chicago accent.
And it's only about halfway, because I think I saw it a lot of times without really noticing it. And I was way more hypersensitive to it today because you had pointed it out to me.
Yeah.
And it's only certain words that he'll go Chicago
He's
on.
He's like that.
Yeah.
There.
Only sometimes.
Yeah. Far. I'd like to think that William Baldwin tried one and it came out like this. He was just like, I'm Brian McCaffrey.
He's like, I think so.
And then he's like, it's not easy being me.
He went Kermit and then Constantine.
Yeah.
And then he just gave up.
I fucking hate William Baldwin in this movie. I'm sorry.
I mean, he does the part, but
he doesn't.
I've never seen him in a movie where I was
Patrick was like, he's doing it. He is up there
he's
doing
up
it.
He's up there doing it. I've never seen him in a movie where I kind of got it. You know, it was like, this guy's a star and women love him.
Sliver.
Right. I've never seen William Baldwin like, you brought it.
I just don't like him in this movie because, all right, I take it back. I respect his stunt work. I respect the fact that he's really good at playing a fuck up.
Sure.
I think he's really good in those scenes because I very much believe that this guy's a flake.
Yeah.
But then when he turns into a hero, it rings so false to me. I don't think that he has that range to go from A to B. Some of the other actors that I read on IMDb that were up for that part.
Okay.
Val Kilmer and Johnny Depp turned it down. I think Val Kilmer might have been good. Depp, I don't know at that stage.
Yeah, I don't know about either one of them, honestly.
And then screen testing for them. Keanu Reeves, who I think is too nice.
No, would not have worked.
But one that interests me, and it's an actor I don't like, but I think would be really good in this movie, is Robert Downey Jr. I think he would have nailed Brian McCaffrey. It would have been a different kind of thing because he would have been a smart aleck.
Yeah, he would have done the fuck up thing more, and maybe his journey to hero would have been more believable.
Yeah,
I think you might be right about that.
But I think it would be kind
of
cool to see.
I don't think it would have worked with any of the other people. And had Keanu gotten it, we might have been denied Point Break.
Which we could never be denied of. I mean, please.
Imagine a world without Point Break.
I don't want to.
I don't either. Same summer as Backdraft, by the way. 91 ruled. Jennifer Jason Leigh, way too overqualified
for
the part that she has. And it's the wrong, even in 91, okay, and I was already a Jennifer Jason Leigh fan in 91. Yeah. Seeing her with her hair that's been dyed a little bit too blonde, made up in a way that doesn't feel right for her. It felt like her trying to go legit and commercial. and it's not a fit for her. And I knew that even in 91. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of watching Ally Sheedy get dressed up at the end of The Breakfast Club. And you're like, no, yeah. I like you with the hair in your eyes yeah. and the dark sweater. That is my biggest complaint about The Breakfast Club, is that, like, here's a character who's weird and quirky and interesting, and let's turn her into just another boring high school girl.
Breakfast Club isn't as good as The Faculty.
Take it easy. Take it easy with your lies. And that's what it felt like. It feels like watching Ally Sheedy at the end of The Breakfast Club, like, Jennifer Jason Leigh, you're not right for this part. However, I think, you know, any other actress who would be right for that part would have been just totally generic. So I kind of like that Jennifer Jason Leigh does it, because if nothing else, I can point to this as like, oh, there's a weird blip on her filmography.
Yeah, she's an interesting actress. I like, she kind of, yeah, I mean, she kind of gives a little bit of, like, idiosyncrasy to a little role like that.
Maybe her part was cut out of the movie. I don't know, because I can't figure out what. Unless it was a really good paycheck, and maybe it was, but probably, like, what was, would have attracted her to a part like this?
A studio picture for once.
Exactly, when she was already doing, like, weird, interesting work at the same time.
I read that she told Ron Howard that he wrote the that they wrote the best part for The Fire.
She's also the one. Yeah. Who auditioned for the Julia Roberts role in Pretty Woman back when it was called 3000.
Okay.
And went in and gave a dark reading, and Gary Marshall, like, kind of said, like, can you do it again? Only happier. And she was like, but this woman has been sucking strangers' cocks. Why would she be happy?
Yeah.
But she hasn't been doing it for that long, was his response. So obviously she was like, this movie might not be right for me.
I would love to be a fly on the wall just to hear Gary Marshall be like, cocks?
Yeah. So yeah. I love that shot, though. And that sex scene is so out of place. Like, it just should have been cut out of this movie. I feel like it's in there because they could stick it in the trailer. But, like, them humping on the top of a fire truck makes no sense. However, I do really like the shot of them on top of the fire truck as it goes out into the street.
Oh, that's a great shot.
And I wish it would have gone on longer. I feel like had that movie been made now, they would have let that shot go for a long time.
Yeah, probably.
And it cuts too soon. So that bums me out.
Mm-hmm. I think it's funny at the end of that scene, there's, like, bad ADR for Jennifer Jason Leigh, where he's just like, where William Baldwin's like, hey, boys. And then she's just like, Brian. But she's clearly like not moving her mouth.
Yeah.
It's really funny. I don't know.
I thought it was weird when they ADR'd her going like, I have to go back to my home planet. Boo. And then she disappears from the movie completely. One other scene that I liked that I want to point out, because again, this movie is full of like stuff that's interesting and seems well observed, and then full of like movie nonsense, you know?
Yeah.
The scene with Clint Howard as the coroner is like maybe the first time I can remember seeing. Okay, a couple years ago, we did a commentary for the movie Reindeer Games.
Yes.
Which I like. And
I'm not judging.
When Ben Affleck gets let out of prison, I remember pointing out, and JB pointing out, because we had both noticed the same thing. It was the first time ever of us, either of us, had seen in a movie someone is let out of prison, and it's not just like one dude, gates open, he steps out to an empty street, gates close behind him.
Yeah.
It was like a line of people walking out, their loved ones waiting for them to pick them up, and it was like, yeah, this is probably what it would actually be. So we get to the coroner's office. It's not like one dude in a dark room eating a sandwich, because they're always eating. Oh, it's just a job to them. And then, like, dropping metal things in a metal bowl, you know, and so we hear the clink, or like working a kidney or something.
Mm.
It's a big room where a bunch of people are doing the same job. You know what I mean? Like, I've never seen that.
That's a good point.
Shown that way in a movie. And it just felt like, oh, this doesn't feel like, despite the presence of Clint Howard and William Baldwin and Robert De Niro, like, this feels more like how it would probably be in real life. I've never been to a coroner, so I don't know.
Right.
But I thought that was a really interesting scene. And Clint Howard is good at delivering. There's a certain humor in this movie, and it's always kind of a dark humor because of the jobs that these guys do. You know, obviously it's kind of a defense mechanism that they all have a sarcastic
gallows
sense
humor.
Of humor. Yeah. And Clint Howard does it really well. De Niro does it really well. Mm-hmm. Like, the kind of lines that are written to be funny, even if I don't laugh, I think they're sold really well. Scott Glenn does it really well. Like, they all get that. And Clint Howard, I think, makes the most of that one short little scene.
Yep. I agree. I think that he comes off better in his one scene than Donald Sutherland does in his two scenes.
Okay. Thanks for bringing up Donald Sutherland. Why is he in this movie?
To have the most laughably delivered line. Did the fire look at you?
All of the lines where they use personification to talk about fire,
yeah.
I don't like.
Because fire doesn't think.
I know some firefighters. They don't talk about fire in this way. Mm-hmm. They don't treat the job this way. Maybe some of them do. I don't know. Yeah. The ones I know don't. I understand that ultimately his function is to like point out, hey, it's probably a firefighter that's doing this. Like, he's the guy that makes William Baldwin realize. Yeah,
the trick to chlorine and stuff like that.
And and who hates fire but knows how to use it, you know. But boy, that could have been like established any number of ways. De Niro could have come up with that. Anyone, Jennifer Jason Leigh, would have given her something to do, you know?
Yeah, I feel like Donald Sutherland, who's a good actor, who I've enjoyed in other
but
things.
But in a different movie.
He's acting like I'm a loony in quotation marks.
Exactly.
And I mean, you could call it like an actor chewing the scenery and having fun, but I call it just silly.
But again, this is a movie that desperately wants to give you reality. So it uses real locations.
Yep.
It uses real firefighters as extras. It shoots inside real fires, you know, without using special effects. It tries to show you what firefighters are really like and the real camaraderie and the real energy inside the firehouse. Like, everything about it is to push this reality. And then Donald Sutherland is doing movie. And a lot of Backdraft is, because Ron Howard, like, can't help himself. So much of it is just, like, so movie-ish. And nowhere is that more apparent, I don't think, than in Donald Sutherland's, like, crazy guy performance.
Definitely. Definitely.
Not a fan of the Donald Sutherland in this movie. Again, gives it credibility, because like, and they have, I mean, in the opening credits it's like, and Donald Sutherland as Ronald. And I hate the "and" credit when it's not,
and it says the name of the character.
I don't mind it when it says the name of a character. Okay. If it's a character that we know, if it was like, and Donald Sutherland as LBJ, I would be like, well, what's he doing in this movie? Yeah. I can't wait to see when the firefighters go time travel. But when it's just as Ronald, I'm just, what is this? I remember seeing in Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo. I don't remember the name, the actress's name, but it was like, and so-and-so as the head nurse. And I was like, what? Because then the whole movie, I was like, we're going to get to a head nurse at some, like, I keep waiting. Why are we going to the hospital? What's going to happen to one of these dancers? Who's going to be hurt? Who's going to have a heart attack? Why are we meeting a head nurse?
Yeah, I never understood, and I'm sure it's just some kind of contractual thing, but have you ever seen on a poster where like one person's name is in a box?
I have, and I don't.
I'm like, what's up with that?
I've gotten answers to so many like weird credit contract stipulations, but never that one.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like it happens that much anymore.
No, but
it used to be fairly commonplace.
I think it was on Batman.
Who was in the box?
I think it was Nicholson.
Well, yeah,
that
for
one
sure.
I
that's
kind
a,
of understand.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But yeah, I'm always, if anybody knows, leave
and
a
maybe
comment.
It is just like, I want my name to pop more,
I guess,
on
yeah.
the poster.
I don't know.
So a Backdraft is deeply flawed, and yet singular in so many ways that I'm glad it exists, and I think it's worth seeing. I think I wish, you know, somehow there could be revivals of it in 70mm, because they just don't make movies like this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, we get revivals of Lawrence of Arabia in 2001, and these are obviously movies that deserve to be seen in 70mm on the big screen.
Yeah,
absolutely. But part of me wishes, like, I'm not putting Backdraft in the same category as Lawrence of Arabia in 2001, but
it's better
in terms of it's in Chicago, you know. I mean, they cut all the Chicago scenes out of Lawrence of Arabia, which I have not forgiven them for.
And out of 2001, those apes were in Gary.
But it's a movie that should be seen on the big screen if it's ever possible. Movie nonsense aside.
If it was even in 35mm as a midnight show at the Music Box, I'd be tempted to go see it, just to see it in a theater. Because I've never seen it in a theater. It's always been on TV or DVD. And I didn't even watch it on Blu-ray this time. I found a DVD at the library and watched that.
I have the first pressing of the DVD, and I was like, I'm not even sure this is anamorphic. And so I put it on, and immediately it looks worse than VHS. I'm just like, how is this an upgrade? And then I was like, well, clearly I have to invest in the Blu-ray. And then I stopped myself and thought, but I haven't watched this movie in 15 years. So why do I need to have... Am I going to watch it so many more times that I need to invest in the Blu-ray?
Where would you rank this
adult
in Ron Howard's filmography?
Ah, shoot. I mean, top five.
Okay. I would make I put it at number 9.
Holy shit.
Yes. Here's what I would put ahead of it. In no particular order.
I put Apollo 13 number 1.
Okay, Apollo 13.
Yes.
Parenthood.
I like that movie, but it's got a lot of the same problems as Backdraft.
I haven't seen it in a long time, you might be right.
movie stuff.
I'm a huge fan of Willow.
Okay. Not sure I would put it ahead of Backdraft.
I like Splash.
Splash is good.
I like A Beautiful Mind. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I like Cinderella
Man. I hope everyone enjoyed Adam Risky on the podcast.
That's what broke it.
A Beautiful Mind. It did it.
I'm going to go home and watch fucking Working Girl.
You should you'll be back. You'll be back. Not Satan's Little Helper. It was A Beautiful Mind.
Okay.
Cinderella Man.
Yes.
Is one of the only good movies he's made since Apollo 13 and is another one of these movies that's so goddamn old-fashioned. Mm. It's Ron Howard doing what he does best.
Rush is good.
I haven't seen Rush.
Frost Nixon is good.
Frost Nixon is good and doesn't feel like Ron Howard.
No, it doesn't.
He's stretching himself.
I think it's because of the writer. I forgot. That's more of a writer's movie. Okay. I forgot who wrote that, but it was somebody who had done a lot of good work.
Okay.
Anyways, but yeah. I would put Backdraft at number 9 out of his 22 movies.
All right. I haven't seen The Paper in a long time, but I used to like The Paper.
That was on Cinemax this morning.
Well, you should have watched it instead of...
It was like right at the end, and I've never seen it.
Oh, you should check it out. It's like as an ensemble movie, it's fun. A lot of the same problems again as Backdraft.
Okay.
But worth checking out just for Michael Keaton's incredibly nervous performance.
Does The Paper Factory set on fire?
It does. It does. And Scott Glenn dies.
Does Robert Duvall break his back on a chemical drum? Because I really want that to happen.
Only after seeing The Judge.
And he's just like, and then he'd be like, get down here and help. Help, help.
One of these days, I told this to Heath after I found out he does a sweet Tim Burton.
I heard that was really
holy
good.
Yeah. Shit, one of these days we're gonna do a podcast that's just all of us in character as other people, and I thought for sure you were doing Rappaport, but you might have just talked your way into a Duvall, my friend.
My favorite Robert Duvall quote of all time is this was apparently him and like I think it was Pacino and like a couple other guys coming up in the 60s were like in a acting school. And he's just like, I hate this Meisner shit. You can't do it that way. You can't act from the inside out. That was the greatest thing ever.
Academy Award nominee.
Help! Help! Help!
Robert Duvall for The Judge. Okay. By the way, I'm totally going to Redbox The Judge at some point.
I will too. I've never seen it. But...
Thank you guys very much for listening to the Backdraft Show. Thank you, Adam, for suggesting it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, this was fun.
It was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And we will talk to you guys next week. Until then...
It's getting hot in here.
I thought for sure you were going to go listen for the beep.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.